Welcome to this retreat. And I do not take lightly your presence for the retreat. And I hope that those of you who have done many of these retreats don't take it lightly you're on this one. That the 2-week retreat is a phenomenally powerful period of practice. I reflect a little bit that there are people who don't know how to sit still for 1 minute without getting restless and even bolting, let alone an hour, let alone a day. Some of us have done this for so long that we've settled in and have a certain comfort level with what we're doing. But even so, if that's the case, it's a powerful thing to be in such a retreat. It's a major life opportunity. And so I want to welcome you to this opportunity, your practice. I want to welcome you into this retreat community that we're all forming today. And the idea, the wish, the heartfelt wish is that you all feel welcomed. And that some people find that now finally they can sit retreats because they haven't been able to go on residential retreats before, and so they feel so lucky to be included. Other people find that it's kind of reinforces a sense of separation to just be a tile among many tiles and with people we barely know. But regardless of your circumstance, the wish for me and Inez, Kim, the managers, IRC, is to extend our heartfelt invitation, regardless of your background, regardless of your how long you've practiced, regardless of your gender, your ethnicity, your race, regardless of your health conditions or your abilities or your language or regardless of anything, that our wish is to include you as if you belong here, that you're one of our community. And so that we all can support each other in doing this incredibly powerful, significant practice. The practice of mindfulness is very simple in and of itself. And it often works best when we're relaxed. But the simplicity of it and the way that relaxation goes along with it sometimes can lead to a kind of complacency, a kind of underappreciation of this power that we're encountering in this practice. And in some ways, we say that mindfulness by itself is just to be present for things as they are and not to interfere with them, not to change them, but to clearly see and recognize how things are. And that is true enough. But it's also true that the very act of mindfulness is a very powerful thing to do. And it itself actually changes the circumstance. That, you know, we're mindful of our body. But it's not just we're not really aware of the body. We're aware of the body plus mindfulness. The body as it is when we're mindful of it. And I would say there's a world of difference between the body which we're not mindful of and the body infused with the awareness. There are feelings plus mindfulness. It's a world of difference between the feelings, that are present, but we're not really, we don't bring the kind of special kind of attention or awareness that mindfulness is to the feelings, become something different in the meeting between the two. There is mind and mind states, thoughts, and then there's mindfulness of mind states, mind and thoughts. And the meeting of those two is a very significant event. There's the dharmas, the mind, the qualities of mind, the activities of mind, that the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And then there's the mindfulness of them. It makes a whole world of difference. There is our suffering. And then there's the mindfulness of suffering, the meeting of suffering with our awareness, where there's a choice we make to meet the suffering, to be aware of it, to be mindful of it. And this engagement of choice, this engagement of choiceful mindfulness, like awareness that's going to meet, that's going to be present, is a different world to live in than a mindless world, when we don't bring this attention, choice, to meet and attend to what's here. But as we practice mindfulness, there's a variety of things then we can notice. And one is that we can notice that the very things that challenge us, they are the doors to what frees us. In a sense, in the Dharma, the medicine is found in the illness. If we bring these together and really, really bring the choice of mindfulness to touch and be with their experience. And as we do so, there are two powers, forces, great forces that we encounter. And I use this kind of language of force or power because I believe these things are very powerful. And as we practice and deepen the practice, maybe we begin to appreciate more and more the power and the force of karma and the power and the force of the Dharma. And these two major forces in human lives, one, the momentum of our conditioning, the momentum of our choices and actions and behavior over years and decades. It's quite something what we carry within us and how that momentum can live in us and how that can surface and how what we do today has a karmic effect that can be huge. And then there's the force of the Dharma that for many people is simply waiting for them until it's activated. It's activated through the practice. Something comes alive, a force of goodness, a force of movement, momentum towards freedom, that when it gets strong, it operates in spite of ourselves. We might think that we have to be responsible for our practice, but if we do the practice well, at some point the Dharma practices us. And this meeting of the Dharma and with our karma, this is a powerful thing to do, to have these two to come together. And the way that we're going to study this on this retreat, or explore it, or I'll teach about it, the title of the theme is Recognizing the Path. Because a big part of what the Dharma is the opening and unfolding of a path as we walk, a Dharma path. So recognizing the path. And so first we recognize the door to the path, and then we open the door to recognize the steps on the path. Maybe just one step at a time. And the door to the path is found in our karma, in our karmic conditioning. Not that you have to investigate or you have to review and guess what your karma is. You don't have to do that at all. It'll find you. It comes along. You can just relax about it. And then as you meet yourself, then to be able to recognize the door that that provides and to kind of see through that door where the next step on the path is, the steps on the path, steps on the Dharma path. So the karma what we're going to use to discuss the karma is the traditional 12-fold dependent arising that begins with ignorance and ends with old age, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, and distress. And then, and that's a description, these 12 steps of the working of conditionality, karmic conditionality, the conditionality that comes into place with the karma of our ignorance, the karma of our intentional volitional choices, that sets in motion a momentum, a movement of karma that leads to craving, clinging, becoming, birth, old age, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, and distress. So the traditional 12-fold chain of dependent arising is a description of karma. Then there's a liberative chain of dependent arising, which is another 12 steps. And that's the Dharma. It's a very different process. It's also a conditioned process. It describes conditionality, but it's not the conditioned processing of our karma, but rather what opens for us as we are mindful and meet our experience with mindfulness. It's what opens as we do the Dharma practice, all the different aspects of it, whatever we might be doing. For this retreat, I'm pairing these two lists up. In an introduction this evening, it might sound very complicated, but we have all these days to go through it, that we'll go through it slowly, so you don't have to even remember what I'm saying today. But each Dharma talk will talk about one step of the ordinary dependent arising, the karmic one, and present it as a door. And through that door, we recognize one of the steps of liberative dependent arising that shows us the step, or shows us a step, or a support, or a guide for us as we do our practice. So, for example, tomorrow we'll start with the last of the ordinary dependent arising, which is old age, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, which in shorthand is called suffering. And that'll be matched with the first of the liberative dependent arising, which is faith. There's something to be, in suffering is faith, is found faith, is awakened faith. And faith is one of the important steps on the Dharma path. And then each day after that, we'll go backwards with the ordinary dependent arising and forward with the liberative. And they match very nicely, these qualities. so that we understand how each of these karmic conditionalities that we live under can function as a door to the path, door towards liberation. Now, of course, this is a lot of concepts and ideas to keep in mind if you try to. But as I said, you know, as we do it each day, it'll be simple. And there is a handout on your retreat center page under resources, I believe. And it's on the very top, there's a little link for handout. And there you can see a very simple list of these two lists, presentation of these two lists. And little, you can see how they're paired up next to each other. And if you want to, so you can kind of maybe get a little bit better sense of what I'm saying here now. So these two powerful forces in our life, the karmic and the dharmic, they come together, they meet when we practice and engage the. So it means that all of who you are comes along, and the task is to discover how where the path is in the midst of who you are, what you are, all of what you are, respectfully and lovingly and caringly, and maybe even a certain reverence for yourself as you are, maybe even a certain reverence and awe at karma, conditionality, all the different forces that have brought come together for you to be here today. And the karmic side is not to be dismissed or disrespected or devalued, but it is something that we are also moving through into a kind of dharmic side of who we are. The Dharma is not apart from ourselves. It's as powerful stream of life inside of us as the karmic stream is. And the dharmic stream is the one that's liberating. And with liberation, we live in the karmic world differently. Some people would say we live in the karmic world reborn in a new way. So in this somewhat maybe complicated explanation, complicated in contrast to the simplicity of mindfulness, I want to end by evoking again the simplicity of mindfulness, being mindful now at this moment in a relaxed way, but in a committed way, dedicated way. And whereas the attitude of mindfulness is one of just being present for what is, it's impossible to be present for what is. As soon as we bring this quality of attention called mindfulness to what is, it's onward leading. It opens doors and things begin to unfold and move in a certain direction. And if the practice is sincere, then it's the onward leading Dharma that will join you. So it's a little bit of ironic or paradox that your job is to mostly be present for how things are and kind of let the process unfold as it does. And I hope that in giving these talks that you'll somehow know how to be mindful and what to be mindful of in such a way that this dharmic process can unfold on its own in a clear, more ongoing and supportive way. I hope that you give yourself over to this retreat as much as you can. And I think the simpler you can be and the more you can give yourself over to kind of a continuity of practice throughout the day, the more you will set in motion the onward leading Dharma, the unfolding, the Dharma path for yourself. And I'm hoping that these talks that I give will not lead to a lot of rumination and thoughts and thinking, but rather to a inspiration and perhaps a curiosity and interest to really sit still, quiet, focused, and strong in this practice. A certain kind of dedication. Okay, this is important. This is my time. This is your time to do this. Who knows when you'll have time to do this again? So that's the introduction. And it's maybe a long way of saying that I have a lot of respect for what you've come to do in this retreat and what this practice is for you. And I'm hoping that with that respect that I meet you and support you, and Inez meets you and supports you well, and in this very important endeavor that we're engaged in. So thank you very much. And then we'll start with the kind of more formally with Kim. We'll speak a little bit about the refuges and lead the refuge chant.
Just to say a few words about refuge. Everyone here has retreat experience, some people quite a lot. So it's familiar that we take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha at the beginning of the retreat. And these three are meant to be uplifting and inspiring. And they set a certain tone and shared value for the opening of the retreat. And there are many ways to relate to refuge on a retreat. So I'm inspired maybe to suggest just one this evening. The refuges can serve to orient or align the mind or the heart. And orienting isn't something that we do just once, but we keep returning to it as conditions change. So like as when we travel somewhere, each time we take a turn or get to a new stage in the journey, we refresh our sense of direction. And so the refuges of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha can work in the same way. We can touch into them as conditions change to reorient or to inspire when needed. And the refuge that we take is part of the conditions that inform the retreat. So this could be refuge in awareness, the mind's potential to awaken, or refuge in the teachings that we're exploring of dependent arising and liberative dependent arising, or other Dharma teachings that are supportive, or in the group sitting together, you know, feeling the sense of our collective good intention to practice, awaken, be mindful. So it's good to be both conscious and specific about about refuge. So in just a moment, we'll do the usual chanting of the refuges together. But because we've probably all done this before, we might have kind of a preset idea of what each of the three refuges means for us. And I just gave some brief examples also. But instead of thinking of those, I would encourage discovering freshly this evening what Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha feel like for you. So as we chant, you could feel into each refuge and with mindfulness connecting to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, see what comes up, see what feels alive. And then that might be a place to start with orienting the mind as we begin this retreat together. So on this retreat, we don't do call and response because everyone's quite familiar. And if you're not, I'm about to put them up on the screen. But we'll just chant together. So let me get these up. Can I get a thumbs up that you can see that? Yes. Okay, very good. Good. So if you're not familiar with these, it's okay. You can just listen and you might catch on pretty quickly. And otherwise, if you know them, please just chant along with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami.
So then Inez is meant to do the precepts, but I don't see her on the list of participants. So I don't know if she has a different name or she's simply not here. She's just not speaking up. I'm going to call her to see if what's up.
I'm here.
Oh, I see. You know something? I apologize. It's possible my sound was off, so I couldn't. No, I could hear.
I had a computer thing, and I just had to log right back in.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So, thank you. Thank you for calling. So, I'll say a little bit about the precepts. Non-harming can be seen as the foundation of spiritual life. It's one of the essential conditions for this wholesome states of deliberative dependent arising. The five precepts can be seen as guidelines or reference points that make it clear to us when our choices might cause harm, either to ourselves or others. They help us align our lives with our deep aspiration towards freedom. The more aligned we are with non-harming, the deeper is our sense of self-integrity. This integrity fosters a deep sense of trust, of confidence in ourselves. When everything we do, all our actions of body, speech, and thought are based on non-harming, on kindness, it naturally increases our ability to be happy and at ease. At the heart of this practice is letting go of our attachments, of clinging. Anytime we intentionally cause harm, we're practicing attachment and clinging. We're conditioning ourselves in attachment and clinging. A dedication to non-harming is deeply intertwined with a dedication to non-clinging. We traditionally connect with this dedication by reciting the five precepts. These five precepts can be woven deeply into our practice, deepening more and more as our practice matures. And just like Kim said, you know, see if you can connect with each of the precepts newly. You've heard them before many times, but allow them to be fresh and alive in you. So the first precept is to refrain from taking life. I like to include and to act with reverence for all forms of life. This connects me with my heartfelt wish to treat all living beings with care. The second is to refrain from taking that which is not given. For me, that includes appreciating what we receive. Number three is to refrain from sexual misconduct. For this retreat, it means not participating in any sexual activity during the retreat. In daily life, it refers to respecting this energy and not causing harm with it. The fourth is to refrain from lying and to speak truthfully. I like to include to speak kindly. For this retreat, it means maintaining noble silence and speaking only as needed. For some of you, being at home, who live with others, it might look a little bit different than in a residential retreat. It might be helpful to remember that it's more important to be kind and to not contract our heart than to be 100% silent. And I also like to consider here to include our own inner voice to speak kindly and truthfully to ourselves. And the fifth is to refrain from intoxicants that cloud the mind. I think it's important these days to consider our devices as common intoxicants. So for those of you who might be tempted by your devices, it might help you to consider that the tendency for these devices to cloud the mind, that addictive quality that keeps us from having a clear mind and peaceful heart. So I'd like to share screen like Kim did, and then you can say them with me. Can you give me a thumbs up if you can see this clearly? Thank you. For the duration of this retreat, I agree to refrain from taking life. For the duration of this retreat, I agree to refrain from taking that which is not given. For the duration of this retreat, I agree to refrain from sexual activity. For the duration of this retreat, I agree to maintain noble silence and to speak only when needed. For the duration of this retreat, I agree to refrain from taking intoxicants. Let's share a few minutes of silence. So feel free to continue practicing in the hall, or maybe do walking meditation, have a cup of tea, And for those of you at the end of your day, go to bed early and sleep well. So thank you and good night.